There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
FM Talk 106.5. Filling in for the great Sean Sullivan today is Jeff Poor. I'm here on this late July afternoon while Sean gets a little R&R, I think, on the islands of Hawaii today. But we got a lot to get to today. At the bottom of the hour, we have City Councilman LaVon Manzi is going to come in and talk a little bit about the new USA Stadium and really what's going to happen to Ladd People's Stadium. I think that's kind of an interesting thing. You know, I've always wondered if people would be willing to go to West Mobile for a sporting event. Our people on this side of I-65 over here on the west side of Mobile would be willing to go into downtown. It's kind of a struggle back and forth. I'd say that dates Mobile long before long before my time. But we got that coming up in the next hour. I have Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan, who I believe is going to come in and talk a little bit about Doug Jones' vote on Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court nomination and what that and how, you know, what her view on that is. And I think she's going to talk a little bit about her trip to Austin, Texas, you know, earlier this month for the Republican a gathering of the National Republican Party. Then at the bottom of next hour, we're going to talk tariffs with my colleague at Breitbart News, John Carney, who I would argue, you know, we've heard from a lot of people on this tariffs issue, and it tends to be that there's never been a tariff in the history of the world that has been good. There's never been a point in time when we should have a tariff. I think we should really consider, you know, both sides of this. Tariffs, to me, you know, I think they're the option of last resort, and maybe that's part of Trump's trade policy is kind of, you know, bring him to the negotiating table, you know, have some leverage. But, you know, is there ever a time in history when we could talk about tariffs and it being the appropriate action to take when it comes to American trade policy? I think these are, you know, questions we should ask. But first of all, we'll talk a little bit about, I guess, the main issue of the day, at least on a state political level, is the debate gate, for lack of a better term. Walt Maddox, who is the mayor of Tuscaloosa, is the Democratic nominee in this upcoming gubernatorial election. And he has been just hammering Kay Ivey, the incumbent Republican governor, about agreeing to a debate. Now, Ivey has avoided the debate. You know, she did it all during the Republican primary. She has resisted the idea of participating in the debate, and she hasn't really been punished for it. She's won her primary, you know, without a runoff. She's shown a lot of political strength. But I want to talk a little bit about that first. Just real quick, let me give you the call. Call in number, text number is 251-343-0106. But back to Ivey. So let's play this game. Let's say Governor Ivey agrees to a debate with Mayor Maddox, and where, you know, he gets his debate. The two are on stage together. All this has worked out. You have an impartial moderator. When in Alabama political history have we ever had an, you know, any kind of election, gubernatorial, senatorial, AG, lieutenant governor race decided by the debate? Who watches these things? So my question is, they're really hedging on this debate, and, you know, the Maddox people, that is, what do they want to get out of it? What is the end goal here? Do they think that they can, you know, win off of this? And my guess is no. We've seen Ivy, for whatever reason, people in Alabama are going to vote for Ivy. You know, she had the best punches thrown at her by Tommy Battle in Huntsville, and I think a couple others, Bill Hightower here in Mobile, and Scott Dawson, the televangelist, or the evangelist in Hoover. they didn't really land a punch on her. We had these charades of a debates put on with an empty podium for Kay Ivey. No one ever questioned her. She wasn't hurt by it. So we're kind of repeating history here and thinking this is going to be what wins it for Walt Maddox. I don't think it's a winning thing. I think if Walt Maddox wants to win, he needs to win over some Republican voters. He has to somehow show that he is willing to compromise, the traditional Democratic platform, whatever it may be. It's not going to fly in Alabama. You're not going to win a majority of voters. You're going to have something happen like what happened to Doug Jones last year, where the candidate on the other side is just so bad that even Republicans can't vote for him. And he's even worse that they're willing to go to a polling booth and vote for a Democrat. Or you're going to have to show that, you're a better option somehow, and you're going to have to compromise some of these quote-unquote Democratic principles. I don't know that that's, in the cards for Walt Maddox. I don't know what he could show that he could do better than Kay Ivey. All he's going to do is attack her character. We've heard this. She was a selected governor, not the elected governor, over and over and over again. It doesn't seem to be effective. So I don't know. I think that this is something that the Maddox campaign isn't doing themselves any favors with. I think they're going to be both together today in Orange Beach. Is that correct, Dalton?
Yeah, they were together actually this morning. It began at 8 a.m., a sheriff's conference down there in Orange Beach. And they both spoke, no debate. But they did speak, and Ivy even got in a little dig at Maddox regarding his marathon running. One of the quotes, and our WKRG news report has this, where she said, "I may never run a marathon, but I've sure won a few races." So a little dig from Governor Ivy towards Maddox earlier this morning.
Yeah, and she comes off as sort of a Reagan-esque character, I think. In the Mondale Reagan debate in '84, that Reagan kind of replied to the questions about his physical abilities, that he wasn't going to hold that the youthfulness against his rival Walter Mondale. People get a chuckle out of it. It doesn't really do anything, and she's at least she's been kind of set up with the right responses to these questions, that she's not hurting herself or anything. So I guess the fact that both of them were together and sharing a stage down in Baldwin County is interesting. We did have one dust up when Mayor Battle in Huntsville and Cavi shared a stage. Battle used that as an opportunity to attack Ivy on roads and highways. And, I would argue probably one of the biggest problems in Alabama right now is just the situation on the highways. We all know down here about the clog at the Bayway and in the Wallace Tunnel. In Birmingham, they have their problems in Shelby County. Shelby County is a part of Birmingham that's just grown so much that they really didn't anticipate this, and they didn't design the highways and the roads and bridges to handle all the traffic and all the development. So you just have this constant standstill of traffic, and while they're working on it, trying to widen these roads, it gets even worse. So it's just a constant point of frustration. And I think in Shelby County and here in Baldwin County, that's your most Republican part of the state. That's where you win Republican voters. And if any of these candidates in this last, round of primaries wanted a shot at Ivy, they could have done that. I think Battle tried to do that, but he just waited a little too late to get into it. And the same is up in Madison County. They have their problems with 565, and that's another Republican part of the state. But for whatever reason, these candidates, they run on these weird things, and they don't run on stuff that people really, I think, matters to them every day. Stuff they had to deal with going to and from work and the hardships and the stresses that put on them. So, I think running on something like that versus whether or not she will debate is something that they ought to consider doing, these candidates, to try to put up a challenge to Kay Ivey.
And it seems like they've only hit on the major national social issues. I mean, Ivy's stock answer for him wanting to debate her is that he can't even figure out where he stands on Supreme Court, abortion, or gun rights. So when will they hit these local state issues?
Yeah, and I don't see that coming. Coming right back on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's not Sean Sullivan. It's Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan here on this Monday afternoon. So the moment we've all been waiting for, this Sacha Baron Cohen interaction with Roy Moore. I haven't watched it all the way through, but of people talking about it. It didn't live up quite up to the expectations we were hoping for, especially with such low-hanging fruit with Roy Moore.
Yeah, it was about a five-minute clip that that aired last night on Showtime. That's where Sacha Baron Cohen's new show, Who is America?
Right.
And I believe this was the third episode. And we've all been waiting for the Roy Moore episode because Roy Moore tried to get ahead of the story once he found out he had been, I guess you can say, duped. He was duped into the meeting with Sacha Baron Cohen. And he said he was going to sue if they actually aired that segment. Well, now we'll have to see if there is actually a lawsuit in the works, because the segment did air last night on Showtime. And I watched the five-minute clip this morning, and Cohen is kind of in this weird makeup that has his face look a lot differently than it really does actually look. But he was saying he's a guy from Israel, a media guy,
right.
And that's how he got Roy Moore. That's how he got a lot of Republicans for this show to sit down with him for interviews, where he said that he's part of this group out of Israel, and they want to commend conservatives, I guess, the conservatives that care for Israel.
Right.
And he's always saying he wanted to give them awards and stuff. That's how he gets them in the room. And he kind of he pumped up Roy Moore a little bit. He was saying, you know, I like the things you're doing, and thank you so much for supporting Israel. But then he kind of moved on about halfway through the five-minute segment, where he said, you know, the Israeli army has great technology, some really good stuff here, and we've actually been able to stop three terrorist attacks from Hamas by using this, I guess, using this wand that we have. And we were able to tell, using electromagnetic waves, that there are these tunnels below the ground that they're planning on using for terrorist attacks. Well, the funny thing is, Cohen says, this wand also works for pedophiles. And if you're near a pedophile, and of course that's the big story,
right,
that followed Roy Moore through his campaign last year, the accusations from what were then 14-year-old, 15, 16-year-old women or girls. And so Cohen breaks out this wand that is basically like a TSA wand, like they use on you when you pass through the metal
detectors. Something goes off and they want to check your pockets or whatever, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And Cohen breaks it out and he rubs it near himself. There's no beep. And then he puts the wand over next to Roy Moore. And you could tell Roy Moore was getting a little uncomfortable. And then it starts beeping as soon as he puts this wand next to Roy Moore. And Sacha Baron Cohen, or the character he's playing, is like wondering, why is it beeping like this? It must not be working correctly. So he calls in a staff member that's there with him on the site. And he puts the wand next to him, and it doesn't beep. And he puts it back next to himself, and it doesn't beep. And then he puts it over on Roy Moore, and again it beeps. And he does this two or three times, and he's completely incredulous. Sacha Baron Cohen, like, why is it beeping? It doesn't make sense. It must be broken. And by about that time, Roy Moore says, you know, I see what you're doing here, and I've had it, and this interview is over. So I expected Roy Moore to come off a lot worse, just knowing that this had happened and that he tried jumping
in. But he caught on to the gag.
He did. He caught on maybe just a few minutes too late. He should have probably gotten up and walked away as soon as the whole pedophile thing even came up in the conversation. But he didn't look as bad. He didn't come off as poorly as I thought that he would once the segment actually aired.
What I think reason why it probably isn't as great as it was built up to be is because no one's talking about it today.
Mm-hmm.
You look around the media and it's, you know, there's other things going on. There's Rudy Giuliani's kind of crazy stuff and all this, but this isn't leading Morning Joe. This isn't, you know, the AL.com gang isn't making a big deal about this. So, you know, kudos to Roy Moore. You know, you need a win, I guess, a little better late than never to get a win, but you got one out off of this. You know, I guess it could have been a lot worse, and I think people expected it to be a lot worse, but it wasn't.
And I wonder how much of that, it not being national news, first off, because there wasn't any breaking news. The breaking news was that he was able to dupe Roy Moore and
right.
other conservatives.
It was already, the cat was already out of the bag,
mm-hmm.
and people were already kind of talking about it.
And that was a good move by Roy Moore, jumping ahead of it and saying, you know, I was tricked. I thought I was doing something good, something nice, and I was completely tricked by Sacha Baron Cohen. But I wonder if the echo chamber, because remember when John Oliver, when he took over on HBO and
right.
he had his show, and it seemed like every single week there was a news story out, John Oliver taking so-and-so to task. You don't see those very much anymore. And the same with Bill Maher on HBO. We used to see a lot of press releases where...
Well, the viral game isn't what it used to be with these guys. So, yeah, and the same websites pick them up, the mediaites, they pick up these clips and run them and help make them viral. But to me, that you haven't had that with this show as much as you had. You had where they were, I guess, smart, the buildup came before, and it made people want to subscribe to Showtime, perhaps. And they, oh, this sounds like a funny show. They're making fun of right-wingers, and that's, you know, and you have this buildup, and it gets all the media attention on MSNBC, CNN, the New York Times is writing about it. And, you know, we're seeing the pictures of Borat on newspapers and all websites and stuff like that. And if you look at it from that perspective of then trying to get people to subscribe to Showtime, which, you know, I have HBO, I don't have Showtime, but maybe that was the plan. To me, it's, yeah, it hasn't quite lived up to those expectations. Even the Matt Gaetz interview, he got duped, but, you know, he handled, they seem to handle it better than what we expect him to handle it, except for the guy who dropped his pants, and that was a little strange. But for the most part, it hasn't been what it, you know.
No, and I don't know if Sacha Baron Cohen thought that he would be, you know, signing the political career death certificates for a lot of these guys. But with Roy Moore, I mean, that certificate was signed about a year ago at the end of that campaign. But I think Cohen probably lost. If he would have had a right-wing audience at all, he probably lost them years ago during the Bruno Borat days. I think probably the people that are checking in and watching that show, mostly liberals, and like I said, echo chamber, they're seeing what they've already wanted to see. So I'm not sure it's reaching the audience maybe that Cohen might have expected.
Well, you need to throw his audience kind of a curveball here, or a changeup, and go after some Democrats and embarrass them, you know. And it seems like there's some ripe fruit for the picking to do this, because, you know, these guys, well, the congressman from Georgia that talked about Guam tipping over, and just some of the crazy stuff that Maxine Waters and Sheila Jackson Lee has said over the years, you know, and there's bound to be just, you know, all kinds of stuff you could go after some of these New England liberals for, and their idealism and stuff like that. If I would argue, if you really wanted to amass an audience probably and get more headlines, you know, go after some of these Democrats and see what happens. You know, like, obviously he's not worried about winning a popularity contest, but you know, my suggestion, if I'm just sitting here and spitballing ideas, since this seems to be, you know, you've already won this side over, why don't you try doing it with this side?
Yeah, and I feel like Cohen is now lumped in with a lot of the left-wing comedians that are on late-night shows. I mean, I feel like most conservatives with this new show would lump him in with the Samantha Bees and the John Olivers and the new guy on The Daily Show that took over for Trevor Noah. When Cohen is a comedian and as an actor, he's actually a lot more creative, a lot more humorous than some of these other comedians.
Well, all these other guys have like 20 writers, right? You know, when John Stewart, who's the legend, and he, whenever he would win an Emmy, he would bring his whole staff out on the stage or take up the whole stage. It's just so many writers. And Stewart was good at acting the part, but he wasn't coming up with this stuff off the cuff. So maybe where Cohen comes in better is he's able to kind of produce some of this on his own, I think.
And a side note, every time there's a story out about Cohen's show, Sacha Baron Cohen, they just write, on the tweets and on the headlines, they write Cohen says, and of course with another Cohen in the news, Michael Cohen, I keep, you know, these stories are hard to keep up with because I'm like, oh, now Michael Cohen is weighing in on Roy Moore and what he thinks of, and I click on it and it's actually just Sacha Baron Cohen.
It should just be Borat colon blank 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 blank, right?
That'd be an easier way to keep up.
Well, you have a congressman from Memphis, Stephen Cohen, and you have Michael Cohen, and now you have Sacha Baron Cohen, and yeah, you can see how it gets jumbled up.
Yeah, too many Cohens out there, but and I'm sure, I wonder if these are all the surprises he has, or if there are any bigger Republican names that maybe he's duped, because we've already been through Cheney, that representative out of Georgia who was forced to resign, and I would say rightfully so, maybe not because the manner in which he, well, just falling for what he fell for, that's enough to say, listen, you probably don't need to represent anyone.
Well, my question is, isn't the cat kind of already out of the bag with a lot of this? Like, he's duped all these conservatives. What do you do for season two with people on, you know, Borat Watch? Oh, well, this Israeli reporter wants to come and talk to you about, or just, he has to think of a whole new shtick.
Uh-huh.
Or is this just a one run and done? What's the next chapter of this story?
Yeah, I don't know. And I feel like he probably had to take a few years off from whatever his last character was because of everybody maybe being on the lookout for him. But like you said earlier, it would probably help his career if he did go after a few Democrats. Maybe he'd pull in a few more people that would watch the show, but to at least show, I don't know, a little bit of equality, if that's the right word to use for this?
Yeah, just a little bit. You know, there's some bad Democrats that even Democrats don't like out there that he could go after and mock, I think. So, yeah, he doesn't – obviously, he's going to be left-leaning, but there's always that opportunity to poke fun at yourself or, you know, be a little self-deprecating to, for your own cause, right?
Yeah. But I guess my final take on the Roy Moore segment from last night, only 5 minutes with Sacha Baron Cohen, and I did not think Roy Moore looked as bad. I didn't think he came off as poorly.
There were some planned media appearances in this state where he looked a lot worse than he did in that, and that was meant for him to look bad.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think just saying, listen, we're done, and we've talked about it before, one of the few people who didn't fall for Sacha Baron Cohen's tricks in the past on the Ollie G Show, President Trump. He's one of the few whose BS detector went off pretty quickly when he was in the same room.
You wonder how many times people try to dupe President Trump. And here's a guy that's the reality TV show guy. So The Apprentice and all that, I think he knows what's going on and what doesn't. And it's probably a little harder to pull a fast one on him.
I agree.
It's FM Talk 106.5. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on this July Monday afternoon.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
And it's Jeff Poore in for Sean Sullivan here today on this Monday afternoon. I want to talk real quick about what's going on locally here in Mobile and a little bit about this whole idea of building a stadium in West Mobile out at the University of South Alabama campus. So I've asked my good friend, LaVon Manzi, city councilman, to come on and join us. Councilman, it's good to hear from you. It's been a while, but tell the listeners right now where we are with this. And, you know, I understand the vote's been postponed. It's not going to be tomorrow as a lot of people expected it, or some people expected it to be. But where do you think we are right now?
Well, I think I know, speaking for myself, I'm still considering all of the various ideas, reading over all of the information that's been presented before us. This is not, in my opinion, a decision that needs to be made in haste because it's so impactful for so many residents and essentially for this entire region. So it's one that I think merits careful deliberation so that we do and make the kinds of decisions that are in the best interest of our citizens.
When they talk about it, I guess the proposal is they would build the stadium with some city money out at the South Campus. And then what do you think the idea, I guess, is the Ladd Peoples would become something kind of more of a high school venue and not really be downsized? How do you, in your eyes, what should be done with the Ladd Peoples facility?
Well, and that's just it, Jeff. I don't want it to come strictly from my eyes. I think we need to have an enormous amount of community engagement to make certain that those who live and have worked and played and attended games around that area, across this city, have some say as to, you know, what the next chapter would be, what the next phase would be. There are those who argue that we might, if this goes through, and that's still an if, there are those who would propose that it would be turned into a high school stadium. I'm not necessarily a big fan of that because I believe high school stadiums ought to be built by the county school system like they built stadiums for every other school. There are those who argue and propose that it could potentially be continued to be used for HBCU games and festivals and things of that nature. I think that would involve a robust community discussion as to what do we do next. And I'll be in favor of whatever the community wants to see the next chapter be.
What have you heard so far from your constituents? You know, obviously there's a pushback, or we wouldn't be having this discussion. This would have been kind of done and decided already. But I've always wondered that there seems to be two kind of groups of people in Mobile. Some people that never go west of I-65 and some people that never go east of I-65. And my question is, would these people downtown and you know, around your part of town that you represent, would they be willing to go all the way out to West Mobile to the Senior Bowl or any of these other events? I'm skeptical of that. But, you know, what are you hearing from people that you represent about things like that?
Well, I hear from two factions. There's this faction that at this present time didn't want to go to lab for anything. And then there's this stronger faction, more passionate and emphatic faction, that says that with all of the needs here in our city, we have almost $250 million worth of capital backbone needs, that they would much rather see those resources deployed to fix ancient drainage systems and to repave these horrible concrete streets that aren't that far from Lab State, to make certain that we're offering the best parks and rec amenities that we can, so that we can continue to make Mobile a place that people not only just want to work, but they'll actually want to live. Offer some of the amenities that our competing cities in Baldwin County can offer. And so I hear that. I hear that strongly. And I admit publicly that those arguments are quite persuasive. As, you know, you see the need across the city every day. And so they're definitely two camps. And they probably will continue to be two camps even after this decision is made.
Now, Councilman, you and I, we both met years and years ago. We were both students at the University of South Alabama. I was kind of the provocateur newspaper editor, and you are an SGA senator, and that's how we got to know each other. You know, as sort of a somebody who come out of South Alabama, what do you think of the whole football program and the idea that they need an on-campus stadium, just purely from your personal perspective?
Oh, from that perspective, I think the football program is great. I was on the SGA Senate when Jennifer Edwards was president, and I think the increase in student fees actually was voted on. And so I have been a supporter of the idea and the concept probably since its inception. From that perspective, I proudly tell people, I think South needs their own on-campus stadium if they're ever going to move to that next level, where it gets murky and where it gets somewhat contentious in people's concept is that they need city money. The concept that they need governmental assistance, either from the county or the city. That's where I think most people, you know, we had a community meeting the other day at Williamson High School, and I think if you had asked those citizens how many think University of South Alabama should build their stadium on campus, probably about 95% would have raised their hands. Where it gets complicated and convoluted is the requirement or the request that they get city money for 20 years to do it.
You know, in Montgomery, when Alabama State built their stadium, they got a nice stadium. When you're coming up over I-85 there and you're heading downtown, you see the stadium, and it's just, I mean, it's practically, well, maybe a mile from the Crampton Bowl. Is there, you know, if Montgomery could have two stadiums and they can both kind of operate this way, what's to stop Mobile from kind of fixing up Ladd a little bit and go ahead and doing something else, too, with the University of South Alabama?
Limited thinking. That's what's going to stop it. I believe this community is big enough to support two stadiums. If Montgomery can do it with ASU's field, with their new stadium at Crampton Bowl in Birmingham, if you Jeff, right now, Birmingham, Jefferson County, the BJCC, and UAB are planning a much bigger stadium at the BJCC complex that all of them will have ownership of and all of them will have usage of. And I have heard no discussion, absolutely none. As a matter of fact, I've read where they're going to make augmentations. They're going to make additions. No discussion of them making Legion Field obsolete.
Yeah, they have Lawson Field and all these other fields.
No discussion of
that. Right. They have all these other fields. The thing I see with Mobile, it's to me what where it's different from Birmingham, just the city of Birmingham, and I'm not talking about all the suburbs. Mobile is so much more spread out and would lend itself, I think, to maybe two facilities. But I, you know, all you've really heard is the idea that Ladd Peoples is just it's part of the Dust Bowl of history, and it needs to go away or be downsized.
Well, I think that's what we've heard. That's kind of been the spin. And I believe over the next 3 years, as South builds out, whether we give them resources or not, I believe they'll build. We should have a community conversation with those who are interested and see what the course should be and what kind of course should be charted for the future of Ladd Stadium. But I don't believe Ladd is on his last legs by no stretch of the imagination. And I'm not going to support any agenda item that would lead to its demolition.
So we'll kind of shift gears here. What's going on? What else is going on in Mobile? I haven't heard much talk about the Civic Center or any of that. Those used to be the hot button issues. Have we just abandoned any hopes of doing something with that situation now that we're focused on this football situation?
Well, I believe that all of that is currently being studied to see. I believe CBRE has been engaged to continue to study, and I think the next phase would be to just kind of test the waters as to what could potentially be there on their footprint. All of these kinds of decisions are very emotional, very impassioned decisions, particularly on behalf of citizens who are used to going to the Civic Center, who are used to going to Ladd Stadium, are used to using these municipal amenities, and don't want to see our city fall backward from Pensacola and Biloxi and Mississippi, Montgomery, Birmingham. They want to see us move forward. And so we have to find ways, in my opinion, to continue citizen engagement, marry that with realistic financial and fiscal goals, and see how we can move forward.
All right. Well, there you have it. Councilman, I want to thank you for coming on today. And, we're definitely going to keep our eyes on this situation. I think there's a lot of interest in it. And it's curious to me that the discussion seems to be one-sided.
Well, it does. And that's the part that I haven't quite figured out. Why aren't we in a community with nearly 200,000 people proper, nearly 600,000 people in the region, not able to support the concept of two stadiums? Well, other communities, much smaller, do it and do it successfully. And I believe if we would get over some limited thinking, we'd be able to do it as well.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thanks again, Councilman, for coming on FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. We're coming right back at you here in a little bit. We got Terry Lathan, chairwoman of the Alabama Republican Party, coming up at the top of the hour.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Jeff Poore in for Sean Sullivan today on this Monday afternoon. Want to hear from you, 251-343-0106. We got some feedback on the text line, right, Dalton?
Yeah, and that number comes to our text line, and some texts about Ladd Peoples and about the new South Stadium here. This texter, First Class University with a First Class Stadium on campus, are saying that the First Class University should have a First Class Stadium on campus. Also, this texter says, downsize Ladd to a high school size only stadium, which they've mentioned that in the plans with some of the money that South would be sending back to the city, that $2.5 million out of the 10 that South promised the city if they were to invest $10 million into this new stadium. Also, Dale texted in The city of Mobile pays the owners of Bel Air Mall $500,000 per year for 15 years. For what? I don't know. He said Manzi voted in favor of that outlay, which only took 2 weeks to close when it was brought up. This is the same amount per year for five more years. Why is this better use of funds? That's in Dale's words. Why does it need so much more time to figure out?
Well, there you have it. I don't know. I think that, you know, there's this trend right now where we got to have the new, you know, flashy new with the screens and all this stuff. There is something to be said about these historic structures and doing something with them. I mean, I understand times change and people want more. You're trying to cater to an audience and get their entertainment dollars. But at the same time, there's something about Wrigley Field. Or mm-hmm. Ladd Stadium is not Wrigley Field or Fenway, but for Mobile, I mean, you know, you look at the past 100 years of Mobile, Ladd Peoples is a big part of that. Ladd Peoples is where, you know, the world got to know Donald Trump for better or for worse, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that's happened in that stadium. And to me, you know, I'm not 100% on board with the idea of it kind of going away. I think it would behoove the University of South Alabama to have its own on-campus stadium, but at the expense of just leveling Ladd Peoples and making it a high school stadium, I don't know if that's, you know, necessarily something that I feel about that at all.
Well, I just think if, let's say, the city and the county both just walk away, they say, we're not going to invest any money in this.
Right.
Our constituents don't seem to want it. We don't want to put ourselves in that situation where we're voting for something that it appears our constituents do not want. So if they do that, and if South goes ahead and builds the stadium anyway through private donors, because they're saying it's a $70 to $80 million stadium, and they're asking for $10 million apiece from the city and the county. If they want the stadium built, which they do, they've been talking about it for a decade now, they're going to find a way to build this
it,
through
right.
private donorship. And the Senior Bowl and new executive director Jim Nagy, who took over for Phil Savage, he already came out last week and said, yeah, we would like to move the Senior Bowl to a brand new on-campus stadium, and we'll do that if we have the opportunity. I imagine the Dollar General Bowl wouldn't be far behind. That leaves you with the Gulf Coast Classic, which is played every fall at Ladd Peoples Stadium, and that leaves you with all the high school games that are played on Friday afternoons or Friday nights, sometimes Thursday nights, sometimes Saturday mornings. So will Ladd survive off of that? And if there is no money put into Ladd from the city, from the county, from South's money going back into Ladd Peoples Stadium, then how long before Ladd is just completely unusable? Because they had that report that came out this last year, even though the report really was done 2 years ago, that gave Ladd a D- when it comes to safety. Safety, I guess, components. They said some of the handrails weren't the right safety that they need them to be for events like this. So more money will have to be poured into Ladd. I just wonder if the city wouldn't be missing out big time if they don't invest in this new South Stadium, and then eventually Ladd will be needed renovations anyway.
Well, to me, the idea that they can move where it is now and then just move it out where to a completely different part of town is something to me. People. Were they not expecting people to object to that? And, you know, there's a lot of old sort of appreciation for old historic Mobile in this. This is one of those kinds of places. So there was bound to be some pushback. And I didn't really see any concessions given to that crowd, and that's why you were at this impasse right now.
I mean, Elvis played at Ladd Peoples Stadium.
Right.
There's been a ton of historical acts and great things that have happened there. Just thinking back through all the Senior Bowl, there have been tons of great achievements made on the field at Ladd Peoples Stadium, and I know a lot of people are thinking they don't want that to go away.
Yeah, and I think they could probably find some compromise. I don't know. They may have to downsize it, but I don't think tearing it down and putting up metal bleachers is really what ought to be done. FM Talk 106.5 coming up at the top of the hour is Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan. Would love to hear from you, 251-343-0106.